1, 2, 3, 4.
There we go. There's bang on.
There's no way that we're in that. Was it in time on your side?
It was, yeah, it was bang on. Yeah.
Okay, because I was laughing way too hard. We are crushing it right out of the gates on episode 6. Hello. My God.
God, mate, we finally got there. I forgot my Skype handle. I forgot my email. I forgot the Focusrite drivers to work this interface. It's all good, but we got there in the end.
Yeah, and then I call you and you're like, dude, you sound like a robot. And I'm frantically running. And then I realize, oh, Windows did a massive update. Now my drivers don't work from my interface. Now I sound like a robot and Eddie can't hear me. Oh, welcome to the most professional podcast in the history of the world.
We got there.
I'm good.
We got there.
Yeah, we got there. Nothing makes me happier than pulling into work in the morning, seeing somebody in my parking space, and I'm like, this is going to be a good day.
Did you please tell me you left a note? Please tell me.
Oh, I didn't leave a note. I went and found him.
Ah, yes. What did you say?
Yeah, yeah. I just said, excuse me, I went into the ladies' yoga studio that I knew it was somebody, and I was like, excuse me, I'm so sorry to bother you guys. Is there anyone that has a gray Audi that might be parked in a space that says mikeslessons.com and it has like a big sign, says you'll be towed and everything? And the lady raises her hand and I just said, was it just the timing of the day? Like you just thought drummers don't work this early or...
Mate, people amaze me.
I just don't get it. Like, and I'm sure she was extremely nice. And on a normal day, I would have been like way cooler. And I wasn't rude. I was just kind of snarky, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I like that.
Just had to let her know like, hey, I mean, I only asked for 2 out of the 1,000 that are here.
And it's not like there's no sign. It's not like, you know, there's a million other spaces. It's just, yeah.
And it's not like it's just painted on the ground and she just pulled on over it like it was a handicapped spot and just didn't care. It's like a pole. And like you actually have to make sure that your car doesn't smash into it because it's right in front of you.
Yeah.
So, but unfortunately, she had to bear the brunt of the last 75 people that have parked there. So it's not her fault. She's a one-time offender. I should have been like, hey, totally get it. It's all good. You know what? Let me buy you a matcha. Actually, screw that. Let me go upstairs and make you a matcha. It's all good. You're just trying to do some yoga. But it was 75 people before her that caused me then to be like, did you really think this was the best course of action? And then as it's happening, as it's coming out of your mouth, you start to like step away from yourself and view yourself and go like, hey, asshat, the lady's just trying to get more flexible. Let her go, man.
I'm like that with walking my dog, mate. Because Jackson's not allowed off the lead, right? Because his prey drive's too high. So if he sees like a rabbit... Yeah. Or a squirrel or whatever, he'll be off. But secondly, he doesn't really like dogs coming up to him. You know, like you get the small dogs, yep. Like the yappy dogs. You love running up to big dogs. And Jackson just attracts every dog under the sun. Either they're intimidated by him or like they want to... Or just like they're just amazed by this tall, massive, skinny, weird freak. But right. A beautiful freak. So the dogs always come up to him. I'm like, I've got a nervous lead on. So I've got a bright yellow lead that says nervous on it. And every time I have to be like, did you not see me coming? Do you know what I mean? I'm walking pretty much in the bushes here, trying to avoid you, yelling at you, and you still let your dog come over. I'm the same, mate. Now I'm straight to just yelling, I don't care, like, mate. Man.
And I know that I know this lady's going to go home and be like, what is mikeslessons.com? Type it into YouTube and be like, well, the guy on YouTube seems extremely positive and extremely happy. And it's like, well, I am when no one parks in my freaking space.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's the little things, you know? I mean, I was in the end, I walked her out to her car, make sure that that everything was good. But then you and I show up and you tell me I sound like a robot. So we are into episode 6. I hope all of you out there are doing absolutely amazing. Once again, thank you guys so much for the support. It just gets crazier and crazier. Seeing those screenshots on Instagram, that is like, that's my new matcha. That's my new energy drink. I see those screenshots and it's just like, yes, it's helping.
Mate, the other day I had to actually dedicate, like, this is going to make me sound like such a David Brent, but... David Brent's the guy from...
I don't even know what you just said.
Okay, right. So David Brent's the guy from The Office, but the UK version. Basically,
you mean the real version?
Yeah, the real version.
Someone, it's fine, you can say that.
Someone who thinks he's like this god, basically. So anytime I say something that makes me sound corny, I just say David Brent, basically. But the other day, I actually had to dedicate like an hour or so in the evening just to get him back to people in DMs, just to say, right. mate, I'm so, thank you. I can't believe right. this has affected you so positively. And I mean, even now, I just refreshed it earlier and I've got a ton more, mate. Do you know what I mean? I can't bloody believe it.
I don't know what you mean. Only my mom wrote me. she was like, good job, Michael. And I was like, thanks, mom. Yeah. I feel like we're crushing it. No, it's been really cool. And to all of you guys that are listening and getting something out of it, thank you guys so much for listening. But most importantly, thank you for sharing. That's just something that Eddie and I were not prepared for. We really appreciate that. So the reviews, Eddie and I are definitely reading the reviews on iTunes. I got reached out to by an advertiser that was like, hey, I saw that you guys, I have our stats somewhere, but we're like in the UK, we're like the 45th most listened to arts-based podcast. Like all arts in the entire world. I know. Hello. Come on. Two people clapping for themselves doesn't get more douchey than that.
It's David Brent. We're David Brent. Yeah.
Right. We just clapped for ourselves. But yeah, so anyway, so that stuff's been really cool to see. And it was very nice to be like, yeah, no, I'm good, man. Mm. I really don't want like an ad for a washer and dryer set right in the middle of Eddie and I trying to talk.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
We're going to keep it as is. Anyways, you and I have a lot of stuff to get to before we get to that. How was your week, bud?
Yeah, it was good, mate. It was very good. I spent the week just sort of, you know, as you can see, the listeners can't see, but there's a leak down by my door.
Always good.
For the listeners, I'm sure we'll get onto this on another podcast, but, you know, where we have our studios and what our studios are like and how they differ and stuff.
Right.
But basically, I'm in a storage container for the yep. lovely listeners. And I obviously live in England. And it rains a lot. So I've got a leak in my storage container. But apart from that, I've had a really positive week. Just getting used to my new iMac, the beautiful EOS R.
That's got to be nice. Yes.
Yes.
You got new camera. So you have two new cameras.
Two new cameras. Shout out,
you went
Mike.
From one RP to two EOS Rs. That's a big jump, man.
It is, mate. And thanks to your help, I was absolutely clueless with my cameras. But, mate, I love them. So I'm just geeking out, really, and just getting used to gear and stuff. Cool. But I know you've had a very chilled out weekend?
Yeah, just... So the wife and I went to our favorite little getaway place. There's a place kind of on the coast of California that... is just far enough that you definitely have to plan to go there. You couldn't go there for the day. It's a 3.5 hour drive, so it's far enough that there and back would be 7 hours. So you can't go there for the day. You have to go there for like 2 or 3 days. But it is only 3.5 hours. We don't have to book flights. We don't have to really make tons of arrangements. So that's where Amber and I can feel on a business level and on a marriage level, since she runs mikeslessons.com on the administrative side, we can feel when that boiling point is coming, not between us, but between our burnout. Like mm-hmm. we just get to that point where it's like, ugh. And if we ever feel like that in a business you do the same thing in a business where your business is dealing with people and trying to inspire them. If you feel that burnout coming, don't push through it. Take some time for yourself, because you're going to push your burnout onto other people that need to be inspired and that need motivation. And so Amber and I just have our little place that we go to, and it's like, all right, 2 days, 2 nights, 3 days, let's go and unplug. No sticks. You don't bring the reflex pad, as much as it kills Guy to hear that. Yeah. I don't bring anything. There's no Instagram. I think I did one Instagram post on a story, which is me just running along the beach. And that's about it. And so those things are really important. And that's something I would have never done 10 years ago, is take time for myself. But I realized at some point, your students or your clients, they end up reaching out to you and saying, hey, you look really tired. You should take a break. And that's when it's like, hey, I'm doing this for you. But you realize like, oh, it's actually me pushing this hard is now actually a detriment to the business. Yeah. So we had a great time, and it was just a blast, man. And I was able to, the 3 hour drive there and the 3 hour drive back is actually my real vacation, because that's when I can really clear my head and start to think about what am I doing next for my website and for my social media. You know, social media, I feel, is like taking a bit of a turn right now, and I haven't quite cracked the code of what I want to do with it. So
yeah, I know
it's
what you
not
mean.
About,
I know what you mean.
You know, like it's not about figuring out the algorithms and how can I defeat Instagram and all that. It's more like, well, what do I want to be if somebody discovered me on Instagram or YouTube? Who is that I'm trying to get out there? Because that is a free thing, But obviously for both of us, we're trying to steer people eventually towards our paid content. And that paid content has to be more valuable than the free stuff. So I'm kind of reevaluating what the next 6 to 12 months of my social media presence will be.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think COVID is just maybe just, I don't know, it's confused a lot of things, and things that were simple before, like Instagram, you know, just putting
things. Is that a thing over there, COVID? I haven't heard of
that. Oh, yeah, it's just, mate, it's this little
California
thing.
California is its own country. We're yeah, just killing it.
Mate, it's just this little thing that's just fucked up everything. but yeah, no, I agree, man. It's weird. And, you know, I think for me personally, looking at it, you know, the more people at home, the more people spending time on social media, the more people who are maybe out of work now are having to sell things and put things in front of people on social media, and it just gets a bit too much for me personally sometimes, you know. And that's, like we always say, we're running a business through Instagram, indirectly or directly, we are. And I feel that I don't want to be another annoying person on Instagram just pissing everyone off, saying, oh yeah, how are you guys doing today, by the way, I've got a website. I kind of want to do it in a different way. So it's the same with me, really. Yeah, just trying to figure out how to do it.
I hate to say it, but it really is the only reason why our initial phone call, whatever it was 2 years ago, turned into the friendship that it is because of how you view that stuff. Like, I'm a very private person. You're probably, besides Amber and maybe Guy at Reflex, one of the five people in the world that knows anything about my real life, you know? And that I let you in on, like, my process. I don't let anyone in on my process because that is my IP. That's my protected material of, like, well, the way that I see this is the only thing that separates me from everybody else. Everyone can play drums. Everyone has awesome cameras. My friend Eddie just got two great cameras. He's really good at the rack tom. You got to check him out. Eddie Thrower in the UK. He's probably one of the best 10-inch rack tom players I've ever heard. So the only thing that separates things in my mind, besides the personal side of it, is the approach. And that approach is very important to me. And so when I see things exactly like what you're saying, where Instagram has just become this used car sales lot of, like, you got to download my thing. No, you have to buy my thing. No, you have to sign up for my thing. And here's my camp and here's my online clinic. And I'm just like, holy crap.
Yeah.
Well, now it's oversaturated with what I do and what you do for a living. So where do I fit into all of that? Because I don't enjoy being sold to. So then doesn't that mean that I have a responsibility to not sell to other people? And instead, what is the balance of, I do need you to know that this exists. It's doing my own self and my own business a disservice to be pulled away so far that you don't even know, like, oh, you should start a website. Like, when I get those DMs, I'm like, oh, crap, I have not been doing a very good job of my own job if you're telling me I should start a website. So yeah, so I think it just comes down to, where can I provide value? I went through Instagram last night. I had no idea, but I was following a thousand, 1,100 accounts.
Wow.
I thought I followed like five people because I only see five people. I didn't know that I had 900 of them muted. So I was like, okay, I'm going to go through and just stop following these people because there's no reason to follow them if I'm not seeing their content or I don't want to see their content. And I got to say, every single person that I pressed unfollow on, it wasn't because they weren't good. It wasn't because we're not friends or anything like that. It was because, I'm sorry, your content isn't personal. Mm. You're always trying to sell me something. Unfollow. Yeah. And it sucked because even some of them were companies that I'm truly interested in their product, but I'm interested in how they make their product. I'm interested in what separates their product. Instead of, it's like, dude, I know it's $49. You don't need to tell me again. I'm well aware. I've looked it up on Amazon myself. I know what your product costs. I just wish you'd kind of take me into the factory maybe, or show me who was the person that thought of this product. Like, give me some value so that I have a deeper attachment to your product. And I think right now we're kind of discovering during this podcast what people should be doing, which is find the value in what you do. And that is something that's important. Like, share that with people. I think probably my Instagram following would be more curious to see a quick tour of my studio than they would to see me teach a lick while telling them it's part of a course that they can download on my website.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean, man. Like, for me, that's honestly the stuff that I find the hardest about doing this thing and having a business online, is that I hate being, I'm exactly the same. I hate being sold to. And I think it's just so hard. Like you say, like, so I get those as well, like DMs, like, oh, wicked. Like, do you offer Skype lessons? I'm like, no, but I have, you know, this thing.
I have an entire business
I have this thing. And even sending them my website link just cringes me out almost. But yet again, I think COVID has just honestly made everything so confusing, and people are just, it's becoming too much. And now people are having to think outside the box or rethink stuff. So yeah, I'm with you on that, mate.
But it's also something where we all have to have empathy of, well, what if, you know, a good friend of mine and acquaintance of yours, I think, have you met Carter yet, Carter McLean?
No, we've been DMing now, though. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's not very bad at the drums, right? The guy can play some drums.
He's sick, yeah.
So I just saw him post that that Broadway, which is his gig, The Lion King, which is kind of the biggest gig there is in all of, like, Broadway in New York, besides maybe Hamilton. But, I mean, even Lion King's been going on for, like, 2 decades, or I don't know how long it's been. Anyways, that Broadway is paused until June of 2021. So his bread and butter gig has just been gone. Now, obviously, then he has other things, but a lot of those other things are touring and whatnot. So I have a lot of empathy for people where it's like, look, I had it. I worked really hard and I got what I wanted and I got my dream thing and I got my dream gig. And the world has told me, I'm sorry, it doesn't exist. So I am empathetic for people that are just trying to be like, well, I just have to make it until June of 2021 or whatever. So I think the most important thing is, are you providing value or are you obviously trying to take advantage of people that are at home and you just want their money? Mm. And like, I can feel like there's little moments, like I know Mark Juliana is doing some online stuff and I'm like, man, this guy is always way too busy to let people into his world. But everybody is so curious about how he does things. This is a bonus. This is a gift. We are getting gifts from some of the greatest artists in the world that we're allowed to get some insight on how they see the world and how they play and why they play what they play. I'm totally good with that stuff, you know, but even that, it's still a sell. So it's still just an oversaturated market. So I think that gives us a good place to steer into our topic today. You and I started off clearly not knowing that our current career path was going to be where we were going to land. And we were both lucky enough to have very similar experiences as far as we had local bands that eventually got record deals, eventually toured, things got big, and then eventually we still ended up where we are now. But it was a choice, you know, for I'm sure it was a little bit different for both of us, but mine was a very specific, on a day, I quit my band and told them I'm going to teach for the rest of my life. Mm. And so it was a choice. But I want to first talk about the beginnings of LTA, the beginnings of Simon Says. For us, it was definitely, you know, it wasn't even van and trailer. The very beginning was just ask your mom to take your gear to the gig, you know, and kind of grow through that. Eventually, we got to the point where we were starting to sell out local shows, and we built ourselves through the local scene. In our scene, we had Papa Roach, the Deftones, a band called Cake that was a little bit before our time. And so that was kind of our local scene of rock. Kept going till eventually we got a record deal. And then this is kind of where I want to start with you. When the record deal comes, I was under the impression that it was private jets. The record company was like, you can have a van and a trailer because you need to earn your stripes. Even though we have the tour budget for you to have a bus, you've never even van and trailered the US. So that's how you're going to start. Did you do van and trailer stuff or did you go straight to a bus with LTA?
So here in the UK, it's a little, I feel like it's a little bit different. Like you get the van and the trailers in America, and here you just get like sprinter vans. So like Mercedes sprinter vans. And what you do is you've got enough room at the back for the gear, but then you do a little bit in the middle where you guys can sleep. And to be honest, mate, they're really, really nice. And that's what we did. That's what actually before that we had an old Royal Mail van. It was the worst piece of shit ever.
Bro, we had an Oakland City tar truck that delivered tar to roofers, and we painted it with rollers, bright purple, and put our name on the front of it. And yeah, so that was but that was still before we had the record deal. The Sprinter thing, you know, that didn't quite exist for us just yet. I don't think we even knew about that. So yeah, we definitely went van and trailer.
Yeah. So it's kind of the same thing, but yeah, to answer your question, but yeah, it was pretty much vans. And then we got into buses pretty much after we signed, but it's always a funny one though, mate. Like, I'm sure we'll get onto this. I'm probably jumping the gun a little bit, but for me, like, having a bus is cool, but I actually prefer a van. and I prefer a hotel. I prefer a hotel room.
100%.
With LTA, there was about 8 of us in a hotel room, though. So I didn't prefer it then. I prefer it now. You know, mate, honestly, like LTA, yeah, man, back in the day, we used to be the tightest, most... we were little shits, basically. We used to cram in a van, way too many people, get to a hotel room, 8 to 9 people in one room, have to pretend like we didn't know each other, have to go down at different times to get spare pillowcases and all that kind of stuff.
Ah, gotcha.
Yeah,
gotcha.
So we weren't, you know, you're not allowed to do that. But yeah, we back in the day it was vans, and then we moved on to buses pretty much when we, yeah, when we signed to Ireland, yeah, for the first time. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I'm with you. I thought that the tour bus was the dream. I didn't realize that when we first got our bus that then the record label would take away our hotel rooms and be like, okay, now you have a tour bus and one shower room. So in the morning, everyone can go in, take their showers and start their day. And then, so the way it worked for us was every night there was the bus and, you know, a normal bus has what, 12 bunks or 6 bunks?
Yeah. I mean, like here you can get up to 16 people, but yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you got your bunks and then you've got like maybe a bedroom in the back that you could turn in. So we would have that, and then we would have a hotel room every single night, and one person cycled through that. So it's like, all right, Mike, tonight's your hotel night, and you get the room. But then in the morning, it's everyone's room, and that's where everyone takes their showers and stuff. So that was our norm, and that stuff was fine. But I think the thing that we should get into is in that lifestyle, whether it's a van and a trailer or a tour bus, you are in very close quarters with a lot of other people. Practicing is a nightmare. You feel every day your skills going straight down the toilet because you can't practice.
Yeah, exactly. And if you do practice, you get someone who's hungover telling you to shut up.
It's totally, everyone hates it. I mean, there's nothing I hate to say it, but it really doesn't bother me if a guitarist unplugged is working on his scales. But I get it that my paradiddles at 210 full volume are kind of annoying.
Playing on like a sofa. Like we said before, mate, I used to walk into a dressing room and if I used to see like a leather sofa, I used to be like, oh, get in, mate. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
I've got a leather sofa.
I got the slap. Oh. Yeah, the slap, the attack. And the leather locks in the skin cells, unlike the cloth ones where the skin just puffs. Oh,
mate, the dust. The dust from years and years of rock and rollers coming in and farting on them. Oh my God, mate.
Especially their roadies and they're all 50 and they just can't go home because they have kids in every state.
Yeah, exactly. Ugh. Yeah, I mean, I never used to practice on tour, really. Actually, there was one tour that I definitely practiced on, and that was the tour that I sacked off the double bass pedal. So I stopped using it on this one particular tour.
Okay.
Brought a practice pad with me, bought a bass drum practice pad. And I remember the reason why I bought them because it was the same circuit of venues that we had done a million times. So I knew no one was going to go out exploring. Everyone would just be chilling on the bus and watching movies and stuff. So I thought this was my time. So that was the only time I actually practiced. And I got a lot done. Normally, like, you're right, mate, you don't practice.
It's tough.
I guess your practicing is watching other drummers perform, I guess.
I guess, yeah. I mean, well, the problem that I had was that I was touring in a style that was not relative to my dreams of me as a player in the future. Like, when I saw myself in the future, I saw this kind of fusion drummer. And then I was touring in this very straight-ahead rock, you know, I guess it would have been called new metal at the time, new metal band. And the problem that I had with that was, one, we were generally an opening band. So we were on big tours, but it's big tours playing 6 songs a night instead of 12 songs a night. Right. So I wasn't drumming for very long. Two, it's rock with an album. So rock with an album means you play what was on the album because some kid's going to air drum those fills with you. So it's not like I'm improvising for 30 minutes. I'm playing songs that I've been playing for 3 years straight and I'm bored out of my mind. And then right when I start to realize maybe I shouldn't be doing this anymore is when I'm like, I wonder what this verse would sound like in 7. And I wonder how bad it'll mess up my bandmates when I don't tell them it's about to go down. And I'm just telling the guitarist, keep nodding your head on the 7th bar. We'll hit the 1 again. It'll be fine. So I think that eventually what happened is I just learned to bring a second little jazz bop kit. And as soon as the trailer was unloaded, then I set up my second kit in the trailer. And the trailer became my practice room because we were always in parking lots in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
So really, I wasn't bothering anybody. and I was able to just play my heart out. And the other thing that I did was anytime I came through a town that had a massive music school. So if I was in Boston, Berklee School of Music, if I was in London, I'd go to like whatever the local BIM was. But anywhere I went, is I would just try to find like, where is the bookstore for this school? And I'll buy the 20 or the 2002 curriculum for Berklee School of Music because I can read. So I'm going to go through the entire curriculum for the year on my tour bus. And that's what I would do every night. And while my band was out just partying and with the other bands, I was sitting on a bus with a pad going through the Berklee School of Music curriculum or the PIT curriculum from Los Angeles or the Atlanta Institute of Music Technology. So that was kind of my main thing, was just like, well, I'm going to save up all my money and then go to their bookstore and buy their entire year's worth of curriculum. You know?
Yeah, I feel like if we tour together, God, I can't even talk. The Red Bulls hit me. I'm at a Red Bull peak, mate. My lips are starting to tremble. I feel like if we toured together, we would have hung out because that's one thing that I was always shocked by is that when you tour, you know, naturally you go towards the drummer and you're like, oh, hi, mate, my name's Eddie. Blah, blah, blah. Right. What kit have you got? What cymbals are you using? And to be honest, mate, 9 times out of 10, they didn't give up. They didn't care. Do you know what I mean? They were just in a band to play music and that was cool. But I definitely realized pretty quickly that I was a freak, maybe. I liked 100%. Drumming and I was obsessed with it and I liked practicing. I always warmed up, and for me it wasn't this thing that I had to do, it was something that I was already doing already. And then I used to dive into practice as much as I could and I used to love it, man. But yeah, it was very, very interesting to me to see how many drummers toured but how many people didn't really consider themselves a drummer. It was
totally
nuts.
And I remember my first couple tours always asking the question, so what are you working on? And every time the answer was like, the set. I'm like, well, I'm assuming you know those songs by now. They've been on the radio for a year. What are you working on that's not related to your band? And they were like, I don't know what you're asking. And I'm like, oh, Jesus. Well, this is awkward.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, they make a magazine for us. You could just get that and learn about our scene and learn about, you know, our I mean, because I'm over there at their kit just being like, oh, so you're using nylon washers in between your tension rods and the lug casing. And they're like, I have no idea my tech did that.
Mate, the one thing that like springs to mind is my whole touring experience was like, they would see me with a Tama kit and be like, who's this really uncool guy and what's that brand? Everyone used to play Truth, SJC, all these kind of brands.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like, and it was like, if my kit didn't light up in the dark, I was a fucking, you know, I was the most uncool guy in the world. And I remember like rocking up with like 2 high toms on a Tama kit and everyone thinking that is the ugliest thing I've ever seen. And I was just standing there thinking, mate, watch me, right? In 2 years' time, you all have 2 high toms and you'll be begging for a Tama deal. And look what's happened now, mate.
Look what's happened now.
The only time people chat to me about drums when they're in a band is to ask for free stuff. That's it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, have you got blah, 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 like contact email?
And I'm sure the fact that your bass drum wasn't 97 inches deep, they were like, what is that? What is that? I mean, that's not even a bass drum. Like, you know, a bass drum is something that 2 to 3 people could lay down in comfortably and just spend the night.
Yeah.
And I'm like, dude, I don't know who told you this, but that's a resonant head. Yeah. It cannot resonate if the sound from the batter head never makes it to the resonant head. Sound waves don't travel forever. It cannot resonate. There's no low end with your tube. Sorry. I know it looks like a can. Everybody be like, it's a cannon. I'm like, well, it's really not. If you actually just brought that resonant head a lot closer to the batter head, it would actually sound a lot better. Did you ever just take a gander at John Bonham's bass drum? It wasn't 42 feet long. It wasn't like, I mean, come on, they don't even make cases for what you're playing.
Oh, it's so true, mate. It's so true,
I'm
man.
Just going to slow down. No, we got too much tea and too much Red Bull going.
Oh, mate, I know. I'm back on the sugar-free stuff today, though, mate. Do you know what I mean? I'm back
attaboy,
on that.
Attaboy.
I love that. I'm sugar-free Red Bull. If Red Bull were listening, send me a crate, mate. Come on.
Okay, so let me ask you this. We're going from this touring lifestyle. You and I both were lucky enough to glimpse the life, right? So the life is whoever you're opening for. Eventually, you got a chance to have the life with Busted. I got a chance to have the life with Filter. I also knew, and I don't know if you felt this way with Busted, but I knew in the Filter situation, it was a rented life. It wasn't my band. This wasn't my success. I walked into someone else's success. So I never allowed myself to feel like, oh, we're crushing it now. It's like, they're crushing it. I'm hired to play percussion. And these hotels, this bus, this is not my life. Yeah. My life was the Simon Says life. We earned that life. So I'm seeing all that stuff. I'm trying to experience it the way my bandmates are. They seem to be having a lot more fun than I am. I'm having fun in the moment. It's the other 23 hours that are starting to wreck my life.
Yeah.
Did you experience that at all?
Yeah, I did, man. It's funny you say that. I did. And LTA was a difficult band behind the scenes, especially towards the end of it. But it was interesting for me, like, because LTA got to a point for me where I was truly happy. You know, we started in the worst venues, not even venues, like pubs and scout halls and stuff like this. Yeah. And it got to the point where, you know, we did Brixton twice and sold them out. And for a punk rock band to do that, I was really, really happy with it. And it took a lot of work. We did everything ourselves and we were very, very DIY. And it kind of ran its course and we were happy to sort of leave it there. But then moving on to Busted, like you said, I'm so aware that success has nothing to do with me. But I almost enjoyed that, like, part of it. I almost, like, love to think, well, I can just turn up, play, go home. I don't have to worry about how much merch we've sold. I don't have to worry about, like, oh, how did the set flow and all this kind of stuff. I do think about that in Busted, but, you know, none of the, oh, how much is the
bus
costing?
But if the venue doesn't sell out, you don't have to take on any of that weight. It has nothing to do with you.
That, honestly, that I think that can ruin bands. Getting obsessed with that sellout, getting obsessed with that, oh, has the show sold out? It's especially here in the UK, the press love to use that as like, oh, well, that is what makes a good show. It's sold out. That means it's a great show. It's like, nah, you know, you can do 80% and 80% of the people there are having the best time of their lives. And that's what LTA got fixated on. And we used to worry about that stuff all the time. So moving from that to Busted, I love that. But I love just turning up and playing. But yeah, to get back to your point, I definitely got to a point in the band's career where I was looking ahead. I was definitely thinking, okay, I want to teach. That's what I feel like I want to do. And I mean,
and I think I know I made the mistake with my band that I would definitely caution young musicians who haven't started a band to not make this mistake. But because I grew up idolizing fusion and jazz drummers, and I know I always say that I don't like jazz, but it was my only outlet for music when I was a kid, so it's all I knew. And I knew the history of these players, and even though I'm not the biggest jazz fan, and I'm talking about straight ahead swing, like, I'm not talking about what modern jazz has become, I'm a huge fan of that, but even though I wasn't the biggest jazz head in the world, I was obsessed with the drummers. Like, I really, really just thought they were great, and I knew their history. And for me, it was like, okay, so he did 3 years with Miles Davis. Then he went on to this trio. Then he did this quartet. Then he formed his own band. So that was always in my head, is like, well, that's what pros do. When it came time to move on, I remember that I didn't understand what they were so upset about. I was like, dude, it was 10 years. That's a long gig. And to them, they were like, it's a brotherhood. There's no leaving the brotherhood. I'm like, no, I gave you 10 years. I just want to go. I'm ready for my next chapter, and I'll get you guys a great drummer, and everything will be fine. And they were like, we hate you. Like, you can't do that. And I'm like, why? I'm over it. It's time to move on later.
Yeah.
And so I wish I would have understood the difference between a gig and then a rock band.
Yeah.
A rock band is a brotherhood. We did exactly what you said. We played the pizza parlors. We got our manager while playing a Narcotics Anonymous meeting, because that was the only time he could see us. Was he's like, if you can book something in San Francisco tonight, I will come see you play. And the only thing we could get was an NA meeting. So we played to a bunch of smackheads that were just drooling on themselves, but it was the only chance that this manager could see us. So going from that to, you know, arenas and things like that, of course, that it was super proud. But the thing that was happening was, I think I was lucky that I had the chance to be, that we were opening for bigger bands. And I thought, well, if their life is my future, that doesn't excite me as much as teaching does. And they have the life. You know, I'm looking at Rage and Korn and Limp Bizkit and whoever was big at that time. And I'm thinking, it's cool, but it's just a flashier version of what we're doing.
Yeah.
That drummer still has 23 hours of downtime every day. That drummer still can't practice. And then I think about me just sitting in a room one-on-one teaching a kid his first groove and his first fill, and my whole being starts to shake. And I also was really lucky that at that time I had my teacher, Pete Magadini, who was like my first pro teacher, you know, the first like guy that I sought out as your Yoda, and I want you to have an influence on my life. Mm. And he was the guy that just said, look, man, I know that this is going to sound weird, but teaching could be your plan A. And it's like, wait, what? I have a record deal. Like, I'm good, man. I got it. Where we need to go, I'm there. And he's like, you're not that happy. But when you come in here and explain to me what you did with the stuff I taught you, you just light up, man. So teaching could be your plan A. So, yeah, so I had to kind of, and the online thing that you and I are doing now, that was obviously wasn't even happening yet when I left my band. I just left my band to go teach private lessons at a music store. But even that was my first lesson in chase happiness and joy, and you will be so much more successful than you ever would have been in just like, well, it's a cool situation and I'm very lucky to be here. I don't want to screw this up. It's like, yeah, but you're not happy.
Yeah.
So chase that.
I think that's what session playing is for me now. So I still love playing live. Like I do, like, you know, I play with friends and I'll play with people that I want to play for. And that's not me sounding sort of arrogant or cocky. I just want to do things, projects that I like. And then I want to play for friends that I get along with. Because a big thing for me, and probably the most important part of it all, seeing as you're traveling and you're away from home and you're living with these people, you've got to get along. And
100%.
And like, all the boys in LTA, we did. But there was a magic on that Busted tour that I just absolutely loved. I can't describe it. It was just pure fun. And then, you know, I'm going to be working with a few friends coming up recently and soon, sorry. And that's all good. But what really did it for me was, if I see someone sign up to my website, or if I put up a new video, which I do every week, there's butterflies in my belly, because I just want people to enjoy it. I want to message everyone and say, did you enjoy it? Did you watch it? Did you watch the whole thing? Yeah. There's more emotion there than there is walking out on stage playing a show. It's just, the reason why I taught was because I used to teach on, you know, when I used to come home from tours just on a Saturday and Sunday in between festivals and stuff. And I got obsessed with just relating to people. Do you know what I mean? And just like you do, that's why we do it. And it's that feeling that I just cannot describe when someone gives me a chance or just watches my lessons. I can't describe it. And they, even talking about it just gets me proper, just buzzed, I guess. But yeah, for me, man, I still love playing, but it's the people. And like you said, man, it's doing stuff that you want to do. And getting back to my point about session playing, I started to do that because that's what I thought I wanted to do. That's what I thought the next chapter of this live thing was.
Right.
I've been in my own band. I'm going to play session. Busted, it is session, but it's kind of not. They treat me a lot differently than your quote-unquote session player. They treat me like family. It's insane, man. But I have done a few session things. And to be honest, it's not really for me, mate. It is not. And that's, you know, I couldn't agree more, man. Do what you truly enjoy. And I think you will be way more successful at it.
I think there's a thing where we feel, all of us out there feel like, well, if I can do it, then I should do it. And I can track drums for this guy or girl's album, mm-hmm. so I should do it. And it's like, it's okay to say no. And I was really lucky that as soon as I stopped touring, same as you, I kind of thought, okay, I know I'm going to teach. That's never going to stop ever. But I think I also want to be a session player in LA. And I luckily through, probably just like what you went through with LTA, luckily through the Simon Says album making process, I had met a lot of really influential producers that were working with the biggest artists. So I was like, okay, well, they've worked with me. Now I can work with them and say, look, I'm out of my band. Anytime you need me for that kind of pop rock world, I'm there.
Yeah.
Well, starting to do that, I just realized that the people that were doing it really well and the main person that was doing it really well at that time still is, but was kind of the new hot thing on the scene was this guy, Josh Freese. And I just remember seeing Josh doing sessions in the same studios that I was in. And it was shockingly easier for him than it was for me. And I'm not talking about the drumming. I'm talking about the process. The process was so easy for him and so fluid. And for me, it was such a struggle to get out of my own head that I just knew, okay, I can do this and I could get better at it if I loved it. Now, I don't mind that I sucked at something, you know, and relative speaking, I was able to do the sessions fine, but compared to like Josh Freese, I felt like I sucked at it. I wouldn't mind that at all if I loved it. And if I took off those headphones and I was like, that was the coolest thing ever. I can't wait to do more. It was more like I took off the headphones and I was like, are you guys good? Is everyone good? Can I leave and go throw up in the bathroom? Because I don't ever want to do that again. So I knew right away, just because you can do something doesn't mean you should do something. And then when, just like you said, if I was teaching a student person to person before the online thing happened and they couldn't get something and I was the one that got to unlock that door for them.
Yeah.
That was the thing that I thought, okay, that should have taken me 10 minutes less than it did. I'm not good at it yet, but God, I can't wait for another chance. I can't wait for the next person to be stuck on that same thing that kid was, because I will unlock that door so much faster next time.
Yeah.
And that, I was lucky enough that I got the chance to do that every single day. I mean, 10 students a day, 7 days a week for a long time, way before I got my first camera. And turn that on. And even then, I sucked at that. So let's make the turn now to you and I decide to put our chips into the online lesson world. Obviously, how long have you been doing it as a business?
So for just a little over 2 years now, pretty much.
Okay.
I reached out to you pretty much as soon as I did it, crying and screaming and just confused and lost.
And that's how our friendship started.
Yeah, exactly. Because I mean, I'm not one for just like trying to bullshit people and just trying to make out like you're the most professional and successful person online. I think that just goes against everything that I sort of stand for, man. And I reached out to you basically just saying, I thought I would know what to do, and I didn't. And it was, I just hit a wall and I was doubting myself and this, that, and the other. And yeah, so I reached out to you, man. But yeah, just over 2 years, flipping out, it's flowing.
And because of the way the world has been to both of us, you had a growing period of trusting that I wasn't actually sabotaging you with bad advice to ruin your business.
I know. I was like, okay, this is really cool advice and he's being really nice here. Is he doing this to completely fuck me over?
You know, the best thing you can do right now with where you're at in your business is triple your rates. So if you can just start charging three times as much, everyone will sign up. I enjoy that stuff. And I don't think that would have went down the way it did without your personality and the fact that I feel that you're different enough from me that we can both coexist, both support each other,
yeah,
be friends.
Exactly.
And I don't know if the listeners have registered this yet, but you know that we've never once said the name of either of our websites in this podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's something that Eddie and I talked about before this podcast ever started.
Yeah, we hate that salesman bullshit, like we said at the start, man. It's just it's not the one. I just don't like it. And I think in music it can be I don't know, it just doesn't go for me. Music and selling, it just does not go. You know, we said it before when people were like, oh, have you ever run ads? And you should make a video targeting this sort of person. And I'm like, you don't understand drummers, mate. That is what that is.
And drummers aren't even, I mean, there's the big group is called artists. The next group down, the subcategory is musicians. The subcategory below that is drummers. Drummers are their own people. You cannot treat them like normal human beings.
Yeah.
We just see things differently, and we see things in this collaborative way of... That's why I said, I mean, my biggest business goal is that you know that my business exists. From that moment on, I've done all the selling I can do. I need you to come to me naturally. And you and I have both dealt with this now in our modern businesses where we both offer online drumming education. When you come to our websites naturally through a process of discovering us online and then eventually going, you know what, I want to learn more, and I'm just going to assume that if I pay for the content, that content is either deeper or it's better in some way. For me, it's not like it's higher produced, like, well, I'll use three cameras for my paid content. Yeah. It's more that, look, I don't think you could handle this truth in 45 seconds on Instagram, but here's the truth.
Mm.
You're paying... and this is the real education. So when someone comes through that process naturally, I think you and I both appreciate that student so much more because they become part of our family compared to, oh, you clicked on an ad that I sponsored on Google. Like, dude, you're just going to come for 5 minutes, show everyone 90 pictures of your 14 kits, and then tell me who you've studied with in the past, just so you know, I did take lessons with blah, da, 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 da. And then you bail.
Yeah.
And then you're gone. I'm like, wait, was that your 2 week trial period?
I know, mate.
You just jump in and jump out. I want you to be there for the long haul. I want you to commit to yourself. And I think that that's something that, you know, the reason I, by the way, that I asked, when did you start, is I want to make sure everyone knows that both of our businesses, if you are just discovering us through the podcast, were started way before anything like COVID had ever been thought of. So it's not like COVID happened and then we jumped out of what we were doing into the online drum lesson business. We've both been doing it for quite a while. And I think the toughest thing that you will find, if we're segueing into, well, what if I want to make an online drum lesson business? Which, by the way, even though Eddie and I said it's oversaturated, if it's something that you're passionate about, do it. 100%. Don't even question it. Do it. Or guitar or bass or anything else. Doesn't matter. But I think the toughest thing that you will encounter, and I want to talk to you about your experience in this, you are now going to teach to someone that is not there. And teaching to the barrel of a camera lens is so different than teaching a student. So you said you were teaching people when you used to tour, and you were like in between tours, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So how did that transition from people, from actual human beings, to an imaginary human that lives inside your camera go?
So it's a great question, because I always wanted to teach, and I always taught when I was before the band days, and then during the band days, I used to come home and teach on the weekends, like I said. And it got to the point where I actually couldn't, yet again, David Brent, oh, Mr. Popular, I couldn't fit enough people in. Well, right. not that I had too many people asking me, but I wanted to fit more people in the days, and I couldn't make it work because I only had Saturday and Sunday. So my thing was, okay, how can I reach more people? How can I reach more people all across the world? Because this guy's a fan of my band and he wants to, and now he likes my drumming. He wants a lesson to see how I do this or whatever. So how can I reach as many people as possible? And to be honest, mate, it was on my mind for years and years and years. And it was, I think it was a confidence thing that held me back from doing it sooner.
Sure.
But that was it. It was like, okay, I want to teach more. I can't because I'm in a band and I'm doing other bits. So how can I do it? And I thought about a membership and blah, blah, blah. And to be honest, mate, like I've said to you before, I actually didn't do any market research. I knew a few people existed, but that was it. I didn't know that everyone had these sort of memberships or,
right.
You know, I didn't realize, like, apart from you and a couple of other people, I didn't really realize it was this thing. Sure. Yeah, I launched it for that reason, just to, because I loved relating. And that's what I've discovered when I did these lessons, is that not being able to read music and trying, but having a short attention span, just being a little bit different in my ways, that actually when I sat down on the weekends and taught all these people, that they related. And that was just like this buzz that I'd never felt before. So yeah, long story short, I just wanted to reach as many people as possible, as many people who would want to sort of get taught by me or see my content and stuff. So that's how it was born. And then
right.
I decided to actually do it and go for it probably 6 months before LTA were going to play their last show. Yeah.
Okay. And that's kind of when I started seeing you on Instagram with your first Canon point and shoot.
Yeah. With my face, like my nose touching the lens. I loved it, mate. I love being that close.
Yeah, man. Well, hey, it worked. And I think that for anyone that's thinking about trying this world, I can tell you this. Please do not get an expensive camera until a very normal camera gets to a point with you that it can't do what you wish it could do. There has to be a moment where you say, this camera's great, but I wish it could do these things. If you don't know enough, then you're going to buy a camera that's too dense in knowledge and features for you, and then you won't be able to use it at all. I can tell you for a fact that if you're brand new to this world, Canon's menu system is probably the easiest. And also, Canon is really good at just doing its job. Sony's are incredible and they're so feature packed, but their menu systems can be very confusing if you've never used a camera other than your phone before. So I would say if you're going from phone to I'm ready to step it up, go with a basic Canon, like what Eddie started out with, which is, well, what was your first Canon?
Canon G7X Mark II. So the little vlogging camera that, you know, flicks up.
Yep.
But to be honest, mate, like to back your point up, there's that side of it. But there's also that side of it when, you know, where you can tell if that person truly cares and
right.
wants to do their thing and actually wants to do it, actually wants to talk down a camera and figure this out and figure out how to do it. Because I can guarantee you that if you put up a video on YouTube tomorrow, just talking down your iPhone.
Yeah.
And then a few other people that I know filmed it on their 12 cameras with their, you know, crazy gear. The message and the actual important thing about that video, which is you and the message you are portraying and talking about and you as a teacher and the information that you are giving out, it would mean so much more because you truly care. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that's the point there. The mic drop moment in that is, please do not let the gear stand in your way. Do not. Like, the whatever you have in your pocket right now is more than enough. I promise you that. Eventually, you're just going to nerd out on the gear because you're a drummer. If you're listening to this podcast, you're probably a drummer. Drummers nerd out. So moving your freak nerdism from cymbals and drum heads and wing nuts over to cameras is really fun. But it's not necessary for the success of whatever you're doing, especially if you're going to start the way I started on YouTube, Eddie started on Instagram. And in the beginning, my content was terrible. I had a JVC camcorder with like FireWire cables coming out of it. And I plugged an entire mixing board. It went like full mixing board to XLR cable to quarter inch adapter to eighth inch adapter plugged into the mic jack, just overloading the hell out of that thing. It was horrible. But no one responded to that as much as they responded to like, man, you seem like you really want to teach. And I think that that's the most important thing. If you want to teach, it is okay to do so. And the other thing you have to be okay with is whoever, and Eddie and I have gone through this, whoever you look up to, they're not the ones you're making this content for anyways. So stop worrying about what they think. The only thing that allows a teacher to teach is the distance between the teacher and the student. If there is enough distance there, you are qualified to teach that person. Now, when you start teaching on the internet, you're hoping that the distance between you and the average person that plays your instrument, that distance is enough. Otherwise, you will get destroyed. I'm just going to give you a heads up. They will come after you because Eddie and I are fairly decent at this instrument and they still come at us with like pitchforks. But as long as that distance is there, or as long as you even say in the very beginning, hey guys, my name's Mike Johnston, and I'm somebody that loves teaching the fundamentals and the basics of drums. All right, we're good. Like, you just said it in one sentence. I'm not expecting you to throw down the craziest chops and to go into battle with, you know, a bunch of shed artists. You said you're a fundamentals teacher. So whatever you're going to do, you have to be good at that. But after that, go for it. And I would encourage you, I think Eddie and I would both encourage you, if you're thinking about starting to teach, whether it be in person or online, go for it. And I think both, and maybe you can talk about this, but I think both will help each other. So even if you're going to be a private drum instructor or a private guitar instructor, do some videos. Those videos will allow you to see how you teach and you will become a better private instructor and vice versa. If you're going to be all online, get one or two students a week so you can lab time with those people and see like, well, that thing I taught to the camera, I just taught it in real life and it doesn't work. Yeah. Then you will get better at teaching on camera because you'll know what works in the real world. That's why I still have drum camps every year, is to lab my content and be like, wow, I was about to film that, but now that I just saw how bad it went in person, I'm going to completely change how I teach it to a camera.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, man. Mate, to be honest, it's one of the hardest things that I've ever done, like turning a camera on and looking at my own reflection back and trying to figure out who I am and how I want to be perceived. I remember the first time I pressed record. I think I said, like, I think I took about half an hour to decide on how to start the video. So I was like, okay, hi guys. Oh, no, I've never said guys before in my life. Okay. Hi. Oh, no, you can't say hi, mate. That's ridiculous. Okay. What's up, everyone? Oh, I'm not saying what's up. I'm not a California surfer. Do you know what I mean? So it took me so long to really think about.
Bro.
I guess the thing is not thinking.
I've been there, man.
Yeah. And that was the that was the magic moment.
Oh, it's insane. It's insane.
The magic moment for me was just, Eddie, stop thinking, mate. Just be yourself. And obviously, it's a lot easier said than done to have a camera facing you. We all know what it's like trying to do a story for Instagram, you change your mouth and you want to look a certain way and you see yourself talking, you have a brain fart. But for me, mate, it was just that magic moment of like, well, I'm not this person. I'm not that person. This is how I teach and let's go with it. Hopefully people will enjoy it. But if they don't, it's cool because at least I'm being genuine. Do you know what I mean?
At least you're you.
Yeah, exactly.
It's okay for you. I mean, we've talked about this in the... Well, all of our podcasts end up being motivational podcasts, but we've talked about how, like, I don't need you to like me. I just need you to feel like, well, I feel like I know him now and I don't like him. It's like, well, that's totally fine. I would just be really bummed if you didn't like me and I looked at the video content that you were watching and thought, yeah, but that's not even me. Mm. It's like, well, then that's my fault. You know, my first, I don't know, 200 YouTube videos was me trying to just exactly what you said, find myself. And eventually watching the videos back, there was like one intro that I was like, I wish I said that every time. And that became how I started videos then, which was just putting the emphasis on is in what is up. So it was always, what is up, YouTube? It's a Facebook cats. Hope you guys are doing absolutely fantastic. And so that was like, but that was never anything planned. That was, it happened once. And then when watching it back, I was like, that's my intro. That's what I'll do. Until some people that you and I have talked about way too much privately started going, what is up? And I was like, you mother, come on, that's mine. So then I had to switch that to like, now the what is up is no big deal. Like, what's up, everyone? And then I put the emphasis on absolutely. What's up, everyone? Hope you guys are doing absolutely fantastic. Let's get started.
Yeah.
So that just evolves over time. I couldn't even do that without looking at the lens. No one got to see it, but you... But that's what it's about, is finding who you are. Now you're a dual artist. You are a drummer or a guitarist or bass player or keyboardist or singer and a filmmaker. And you're starting to become this on-camera personality. But the thing that we do that people it takes people a while to realize, there's no crew. You and I are one person operating team. So I am the lighting director. I am the audio engineer. I am the cinematographer. I'm the person making sure that Mike Johnston is in focus and all of that stuff. And you are for yourself. And I actually really, I think that causes a lot of people to not want to do this because it is a crap ton of work. But I've actually found it to be some of the most rewarding stuff besides the drumming that I've ever done in my life. Like learning, cracking code. You and I were talking camera stuff this morning at 6 a.m.
Yeah, I wouldn't say talking. I would say me having another mental breakdown about not being able to find the video mode on my new camera.
No. I got your back, man. So Eddie and I were just talking shop. It was great. Come on, man. Let me be your friend.
I know. But it's
no,
so
but
true.
I mean, seriously, that stuff, like there was a moment this morning where you couldn't do something. And then there was a moment 10 minutes later where you could. Mm. We don't really get that as much on the drums when you've been playing drums your whole life. You know, those moments are more rare. Well, because you and I are so new to the camera game compared to someone that does that for a living, we are discovering new things every single day. And I think it's just as exciting as the drum stuff.
I did have a question. So obviously, like, you know, filming yourself talk about something and teaching something, we've got to feel a certain way. As you said at the beginning, we've got to feel a certain way in order for the viewer to feel that way, right? Yeah. So how do you get out of, let's say if you're just tired or you're in a bit of a bad mood for whatever reason, do you have like a ritual before you turn the camera on? Because I know for a lot of people it is, okay, don't be an idiot, don't muck up, don't make mistakes. Right. But I think once you find who you are as that online teacher, that I think as you find who you are on camera, that gets a little bit easier. So you don't really have to think about that. But how do you snap out of feeling just not great?
You know, I got to say that, like, the camera has become my friend. That's who I turn to when I'm not feeling great. It's like, okay, well, when I talk to that camera, that will be like being on stage. And I've never once, no matter how bad things were going on in my life, I've never walked onto a clinic stage and not instantly had it all turn around because it was my moment to entertain and to get people excited about themselves. And it was like my time to just take all of my own personal crap and baggage, move it to the recycle bin on my desktop and press empty and be like, this is about them now. And I think when I turn that camera on, that same thing kind of happens. I'm the same as you. A lot of times the first 5 minutes never is used at all because it takes me a moment, especially if I'm having a rough day or if I'm just tired or burn out. Sometimes I'm not even tired. It's like, man, this is the 70th video this week. I'm kind of burnt. But there's a moment where I'm looking into the lens and that lens disappears and it is just all of my students on the website that I can see their drum sets. I can see them. They've posted enough pictures of them, just like your students have, watching me on their laptop, that's stuck in my head. Yeah. So I'm seeing them watch this video and it turns it around for me. And I think also too, like just maybe screwing up a little, I'll kind of be like, oh, cool. I'm going to leave that in the, normally I would cut that out if it was for YouTube, but for my website, I want my students to know, like, dude, it's not always perfect. This is so edited. So I think I'm going to leave that mess up in, and that relaxes me a little bit. But really, it's just the camera is my closest friend right now. I mean, dude, I can see your room. You can see mine. There's no one here. Yeah. There's no one there.
It's a very
solitary existence,
it,
right?
It is, mate. It really is. And it's so funny. But it's the same for me. I asked that because it's interesting to see if you have like a ritual or something that you do. But it's the same for me.
No.
As soon as I press record, yeah, it's like I envision someone clicking on that video. And let's say they don't necessarily learn something completely new. Maybe it's something they've already covered or whatever. I want them to at least leave feeling like positive, or they want to go practice that thing again or whatever it may be. I just want to... And the whole leaving the mistakes thing in, mate, that's just my life. I love that. And that's, for me, like, that's the biggest thing that I realized about me recording myself is that I do make mistakes. I say a lot. I swear. I try to not swear as much, but, you know, like, I say like, and I say, do you know what I mean? All the time. So I'm going to leave it in because if not, that's just being fake and I'm not about to be a fake guy. So
I think if you want to edit anything, then you have to edit yourself, not the footage.
Exactly.
The footage is who you are.
You are bloody Yoda. Yoga? I don't know if you do yoga, but the lady approaching
I can't now because I went downstairs. Yeah. I'm not allowed in there anymore.
I love the way we brought it full circle.
But no, I think that that's the key to all of this is you have to, the camera is showing you what you are. If you want that to change, then you're going to have to edit yourself. You're going to have to improve yourself. If you wish you had more life and more pizzazz on that camera, then you need to have that. And that's, you know, that's a tough thing to find. I think for everybody out there, you know, Eddie and I are trying our best to encourage you to start this, but understand when you start it, that's not when the magic happens. It's going to be years down the road. It's going to take a while. You're going to have to learn your camera. You're going to have to learn lighting. You're going to have to learn how to be on camera. And you're going to realize that the camera steals your personality. And when you get on camera, all of a sudden you're like, no, I was very energetic. And it's like, I'm sorry, you weren't.
Yeah.
Like, and then you go and then you put a little bit more energy on and then you look like an absolute idiot because you're just bouncing off the walls. And it's like, okay, so you're going to have to find out who are you on camera and who is that person and how does that person project? And everyone is different. You know, there's some people that I watch on camera religiously. I just love their videos and they're extremely soft-spoken and measured, and it takes forever for them to say something, but that's who they actually are. Yeah. So I think that if you want to make that transition from whatever you were doing into education, just like Eddie and I have, we encourage you to do that. You can absolutely do it. And let me tell you this, if you do it the right way with the right attitude, there is room for you. I promise you there is room for you because someone else out there will see the world the way you see the world. Instead of the way I see the world, instead of the way that Eddie sees the world, instead of the way that 100 other drum teachers see the world, they'll see it the way you see it and they'll connect with you. And that's what you're looking for. The reason why Eddie and I can be friends and support each other is, to be totally honest, if you fully connect with the way Eddie sees this instrument, I am not your teacher. That's just the way it is. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, that's why there's more than enough to go around. Eddie and I have talked since the beginning. I mean, I would say the only advice that I'm willing to give out that you and I talked about in the very beginning, without going into our origin story, is that don't fight for the scraps. That's a losing battle. If you're trying to steal students from somebody else, if you're fighting for the scraps that are out there, you're going to end up with scraps. Instead, create new students. Create people that never thought about playing this instrument in the first place. Create people that never thought that they could learn on their computer. Take those people. That's a much larger batch to deal with. And then you're going to be fine. But if you want to do this, then you should do this.
Yeah, exactly, man. You should do it. And that's the thing. And I've said it before, I think in the motivation, or maybe in the haters episode, where, you know, honestly, from turning on that camera, I've learned so much about myself than just like you said, you are doing everything. You are filming. You are learning how to film. You're learning how to use a camera. You're learning how to edit. You're learning how to record drums. You're learning how to do everything. In all of that work, in the hope that someone just likes a video. So when you're first doing this, I mean, that's the one of the things that I struggled with kind of all the time, not so much anymore, but I used to film a video thinking, well, is anyone going to watch this? Is anyone actually going to even enjoy this or care? And I think, mate, if you want to do it, if you want to do this, then that is what will be the that will be the moment that you will either stop or continue. Because trust me, mate, like talking to a camera in hope that someone is going to watch it and putting all that effort in, you've got to love it, mate. You have got to love it, man. You've got to love it. But I definitely, you know, like you said, there's plenty of fish to go around, and it's all about just being yourself and just not trying to just steal scraps and try and do it for money and all this other bullshit.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the last thing I want to say for anyone that's getting ready to start this is make sure that you find your own voice as an educator. You know, the paradiddle is the paradiddle. Eddie can teach it, I can teach it. That is not stealing from us. If you want to teach the paradiddle, go for it. It exists. The delivery, that is the IP. That's the intellectual property. So find your own delivery. And for the love of all things Gretsch, please do not watch other drum teachers, because it's inevitable. You're going to be influenced by them and you're going to steal their delivery methods.
Yeah.
Don't watch me. Don't watch Eddie. Watch people that are teaching you how to fix their car. Find a personality. And I mean, you watch fitness guys. I watch car guys. You know, yeah, I don't really. And that's why when you and I, like somebody, you and I'll text each other like, who's this guy? And like, we'll find out like, damn, he's got 250,000 followers. I guess we don't pay attention to the online drum lesson.
No, not at all, mate. Not at all.
Because we don't know who any of these people are. Like, I just don't trust myself. People will say, well, what do you think about this website? I'm like, I'll say it right now. I've never seen your website. I wouldn't even know what to type in the URL, because I know that I know you've got style, and I'll steal your stuff and I won't even know it happened.
But that's the thing, mate. That's the thing. And I think that's why we are mates, you know, not to sound like, you know, to make people sick, but I don't go on your website. I don't go on anyone else's website. When I started my website, I knew that a couple people existed, but I didn't once send a screenshot of their website to my website developer. Do you know what I mean? Like, I wanted to do this in my own way. And that's the thing, like you said, it's all about just, we're not reinventing the wheel, so to speak. But, well, we are in ways, actually. I guess we are. But it's just all about being different, mate. There's too many people just trying to, I don't know, yeah. Oh, that Red Bull's really kicked in. Flipping hell, mate.
No, I'm with you, man. I think the thing that, you know, is important as we get out of here, I'm sorry we've taken up so much of your time today, but I just always thought, even in the beginning, do I want to borrow my ideas and be influenced by a drummer that's doing his or her best to make a website? Or would I rather be influenced by Apple and Nike and Adidas, who have spent millions on design? Yeah, I think I'll take their ideas.
Yeah.
I think I'll be influenced by them. So I'm, you know, I've said this before, but I keep emails that I click on because I want to know, why did I click on that? What did they do that got me to click on that? Because I actually wasn't interested in that product, but they did something right. So those all go to a saved folder. And then I have a whole bookmarks list of, these websites make me feel something. I don't even know if a developer would say these are good or bad, but they make me feel something. I feel like I'm part of their environment, and I need to create that on my website. So I think the big point here, guys and girls, is please just be as original as you can. No one can be more you than you. And if you just go with that, you're going to be fine. Mm-hmm. So thank you guys for listening to episode 6. I hope you enjoyed a little walk down memory lane. I hope for some of you that have toured a little bit or done some van and trailer stuff, you got to relive some of your own experiences. And most importantly, please do us a massive favor. Give us a 5-star rating and write a review. Those reviews help other drummers find this podcast. And then, Eddie, I'll just call you right after this and we'll talk for another hour.
Yeah, let's do it, mate. Let's do it. I mean, I've got a little bit left of my Red Bull, but I tell you what, I am charged off my nut. And when I say nut, by the way, I mean head. I think I keep on saying nut and you're looking at me like, what the? Yeah.
Well, there will be an episode where you're going to have to break down some of those things for me. I also, as a person that follows car personalities, you're gonna have to tell me what the hell a hot hatch is, because we don't have that term over here.
I'll be honest with you, mate, I'm not exactly a manly man. I have no I have no idea. Yes. What you just said, but
beautiful.
I'll ask my dad.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, I think a VW Golf GTI would be a hot hatch, like a hot hatchback. So
I knew that. Yeah.
Yeah, you did. Golf. All right, I'll see you at the Man Convention on Wednesday, where you and I will learn how to
I'll be playing on the side of the backstage, mate.
All right, everybody, have a great day. But for now, episode 6 is in the can.
Bye-bye. Here we go, mate.
Boom, boom.
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 Oh, shit, I wasn't recording. No, I'm joking.
I would punch you in your actual nut, right in the nut.
Let's save that.